Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Some law enforcement officials say incarcerating juvenile offenders may cause more harm than good. Alternatives to placing offenders in the traditional jail cell are being implemented across the state, but some say South Dakota could be doing more. The state has the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative in place in Minnehaha and Pennington counties, but a report released today by the National Juvenile Justice Network and the Texas Public Policy Foundation says that while the nationwide average for youth incarceration declined 41% between 2001 and 2011, South Dakota's rate went down only 13%. The report is titled The Comeback and Coming from Behind States, an update of youth incarceration in the United States. And joining the program to talk about it and what's happening in South Dakota is the co-author of the report and the director of the National Juvenile Justice Network, Sarah Breyer. Ms. Breyer, thanks for joining the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Also here is Greg Sadazan, State Court Administrator for the Unified Judicial System. And Mr. Sadazan, thanks for joining the program as well.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And if you have any experience with juvenile incarceration in South Dakota and would like to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 800-524-3604. You can also email us at midday@sdpb.org. Sarah Breyer, we'll start with you. This report, this was a follow-up to an early report from this summer?
That's right. So we issued a report earlier in the summer that looked at nine states that actually had exceeded the national average of youth de-incarceration, keeping youth in the community in lieu of putting them in facilities. And the Department of Justice released some new data in 2011, and it gave us a chance to take another look at what's happening around the country. And this time we looked at states that were falling a little bit behind the national average, and we wanted to see what was going on in those states. And South Dakota, as you mentioned, fell into that group. But the good news about South Dakota is that it has been making great strides and has started to implement many of the policy reforms that we identified in our initial report that will help keep kids safe and in the community in lieu of incarcerating them. So South Dakota is on the right track, and that's why they're actually in the report.
And how does South Dakota's youth incarceration rate compare then with the rest of the nation? As we've mentioned, it hasn't declined as much, but where do we rank?
So South Dakota ranks pretty far down, but not in, it's in the bottom third of states, if you're looking at states that are incarcerating kids. And I want to take a step back and talk about why we're focusing on youth incarceration, because
yes,
there is a growing body of research that is well documented that shows that holding youth accountable in juvenile facilities is actually bad for public safety. And so that's why we're honing in on this. We can do better by kids and by families and by communities and overall by public safety and certainly by state budgets. If we figure out ways to hold youth accountable in the community, attaching them to services, giving them good community-based supervision, but keeping them in school and with their families. And in the end of it, if we do that, people in South Dakota will be better off. So that's why we're focusing on these states that have either exceeded the national average or are lagging a little bit behind. But again, and I want to give, I know you're going to give Greg a chance to jump in and talk about many of the great things that South Dakota has been doing. We want to applaud that because a lot of that, we looked at a lot, all the states that were falling behind. And there were a handful of them that had stepped up over the past few years and said, we're going to do something about this. And South Dakota was in that handful of states, which is why that we put them in the report.
Well, Greg Sadazan, I'm wondering if what's happening in South Dakota, is this connected in any way to the governor's criminal justice reform package that was passed last year?
It's not directly connected, but it certainly parallels a lot of the themes where we talk about, you know, using evidence to guide our decision making, looking for alternatives to incarceration, and realizing the fact that if you over-supervise someone or provide too much oversight, that you actually can make someone worse. And I think those are very similar things that we were seeing with the youth. And so I think as part of that Public Safety Improvement Act and Senate Bill 70, and some of the things we did relate very closely. This wasn't actually part of that bill, though.
So is this just part of a trend in rethinking the way we're dealing with criminal justice, and in this case, juvenile offenders?
Yep, that's exactly right.
What has the state been doing in regards to reducing the number of youth incarcerations?
Yeah, it really started in about 2009 when the Council for Juvenile Services recognized that this was an issue. And so what they did was engage with the Annie E. Casey Foundation to start working on the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative. And we started in two pilot sites, Minnehaha County and Pennington County, obviously our largest jurisdictions. And as part of that, it really is an educational process on how to use data to guide decision-making, when a youth comes into contact with the criminal justice system, how do we handle them? How do we guide our decisions? And so it's really a process. I would consider juvenile detention alternative really a kind of a change in the mindset where you look at an individual youth and you look at what's the right place for that person to be when they have that contact. And that's guided by evidence. And so you would have the opportunity to evaluate that youth, determine what their risk factors are, and then steer them toward, you know, what makes sense for that person rather than reacting immediately based on whatever the offense is that brought them in there or how it's been handled in the past.
So it's really taking more of a closer case-by-case, just really looking into what's best for the youth involved?
Yep, that's exactly right. We're trying to find the least restrictive setting where that youth can be and just get them to the right place at the right time.
Well, how do those juvenile detention alternative initiatives in Minnehaha and Pennington County, how do they work? What is happening?
So when you have a youth who's been detained, they will go to a reception center, which is really the intake center. So instead of when you think of someone that has contact with the criminal justice system, you think, you know, they're going to be taken to the jail and they're going to be booked and go through that process. So for the youth, through those reception centers, it's not that process. It's an intake center where they're then, you know, you meet with them, you interview them, you get information using a risks assessment tool that's, kind of an instrument that's been vetted scientifically to make sure that it's looking for things to help identify, you know, what are the risks that are associated with the individual. And once you get that information, then you make a decision based on public safety, based on what's in the best interest of that youth, to really find what are the options. Would it be acceptable to have the person monitored through something like electronic monitoring, through GPS surveillance? Would a less secure setting, like an evening reporting center, where, you know, after school, during the evenings, when some individuals or youths may not have that structure that they need, is that a good place for the person to go to provide some of that structure, but not the formal supervision associated with secure detention? And then there's also shelter cares, which are a little bit more supervision, but not nearly to the level of a secure detention, more of a kind of a group home setting where you can have some resources provided for that youth, but not have them being detained in a secured facility.
Well, Sarah Breyer, are these initiatives similar, these approaches similar to what's being done in some of the other states that are showing a bigger drop in the number of youth incarceration?
That's exactly right. So you've been hearing a lot about the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative, which a lot of states have been implementing with great success. And that's one of the policies that we profiled. We profiled six policies that we think have helped states accelerate the appropriate treatment of youth who get in trouble with the law. So the other policies that we looked at were states that have closed down or shuttered or downsized their facilities, looking at holding youth accountable who commit school-based infractions, who have school-based misbehavior, holding them accountable within the context of that school rather than sending them to court, not putting kids in secure juvenile prisons for low-level minor misdemeanor offenses. And incentivizing, giving counties an incentive to keep kids back home and under community supervision rather than sending them to really costly state placements. So a lot of states have said to counties, if you keep these kids at home, we'll give you some money to help do that. So the counties actually have an incentive to keep those kids back rather than putting them in a state facility. And of course, the increase of evidence-supported and evidence-based community alternatives or community options for kids. So we looked at sort of this range of policies that states have implemented across the country to try to hold youth accountable well and do right by public safety and do right by the future of these youth. So a lot of the things that we've been hearing about with JDAI are what we saw across the country with those states that had actually been in the forefront of this sort of youth de-incarceration trend.
Are you seeing that the juvenile incarceration reforms are making it less likely that juveniles are getting in trouble with the law in the future again?
That's right. So one of the things that we found is that there's actually a potential negative impact when you put kids in youth facilities. When you separate, what we know about young people is that they're going to thrive in the context of their families, in the context of community supports. They're going to need education. They need to be in and attached and going to school. And they may need help doing these things. Families may need supports. Communities may need services. And schools may need some assistance to help keep kids inside and doing well. But what the research has shown is that when we separate kids from these natural community, school, and family-based supports, it actually has a negative impact on their overall well-being and on their ability to find the right path when they get out. They're detached from school. They've been disconnected from their families. They don't know how to connect to community-based resources. And we've just spent, in some states, you know, more than $100,000 a year to put kids in these facilities. So there's a really phenomenal longitudinal research that has come out from, supported both by the federal government and by the MacArthur Foundation, and other foundations have chipped in and looked at kids who've committed serious level offenses over a long period of time, over 7 years, and they tracked them every 3 months. And what they found was that community-based supervision was as effective, if not more so, than incarceration in terms of reduced misbehavior, in terms of reduced antisocial activity. So we get a much stronger bang for our buck when we can keep kids in the community and give them the support that they need.
So it's not necessarily more expensive. It would seem that if, you know, at least on first glance, that spending extra money to have more of a looking at the youth on case-by-case basis would be more expensive. But what you're saying, Sarah Breyer, is you're actually saving money by taking these alternative approaches?
That's right. Kind of a no-brainer. You're spending less and doing better. So you're improving public safety, and you're creating young people. You're creating future citizens who are going to do right by your state. So it makes perfect sense. And I think that what I love about the JDAI initiative is that it's so thoughtful about how to build up those community supports, how to get kids into those community-based options and community-based alternatives, and get them back on the right track.
Well, Greg Satterson, is that what you're seeing in South Dakota, that you're seeing these results where these initiatives are taking place in Minnehaha and Pennington counties?
Yeah, we've seen really good results, and that's why we're so excited to kind of take this to scale statewide. So, for instance, when you're talking about reinvesting money in Minnehaha County, they were able to allocate in their 2013 budget almost $500,000 that was otherwise used for other things related to the secure detention, and investing that in some of the JDAI alternatives. In Pennington County, it was a little over $700,000 that they've been able to reallocate. So there are significant savings that are associated with this, and it's really, when we're talking about shifting resources away from secure detention into other areas. And so as part of that, you know, I think it may take a little while to get everything set and coordinated and get the resources where we need them so the program can continue to be successful. But when you look at the average daily populations of how many juveniles those jurisdictions have incarcerated on a given day, it's significantly dropped. For Minnehaha County, it went from about 41 a day to about 10. In Pennington County, it went from about close to 24 down to about 9 a day. And so we're really making a significant difference. There's a financial savings there, but it's also, think of those juveniles that now we can serve in a less secure setting and what that would mean for them and maintaining positive social interactions. And if you're ever wondering, what this might mean, just think briefly. If this was your child, where would you want them to go? Would you want them to go to the most secure place, even if they don't belong there? Or do you want them to go to the right place that matches what they need to respond to whatever the issues may be?
Are there plans underway in South Dakota to expand the initiative beyond Minnehaha and Pennington counties?
Yes. Those two counties really are our pilot sites. And as a result of a grant that we received through the Annie Casey Foundation for the rest of this fiscal year until next June, we've been able to hire a statewide JDI coordinator. That's through the State Court Administrator's office here. And really what we're going to do is take those pilot locations and the success that they've seen and start expanding into the other communities. And that's been a very recent addition. The new coordinator just started probably about 7 or 8 days ago. So we're very excited about it and just starting it. But we think that there's a lot of the success that we can replicate in the other jurisdictions, whether it's Aberdeen, Watertown, Mitchell. I think there's a lot of room for improvement.
Well, Sarah Breyer, looking at what's happening in South Dakota for the next reports that come out from the National Juvenile Justice Network, it sounds like South Dakota's numbers will continue to improve when we're talking about juvenile detention alternatives.
That's what we're anticipating. The next report, we expect South Dakota to be in the lead. So we do applaud the work that South Dakota is doing, and we want to use this report as a way to encourage South Dakota to keep on doing it, to do more. We think that we've had an incredible 40% decline around the country of youth incarceration at the same time that we've been at the lowest crime rate for youth crime in 30 years. So we're on the right track as a nation, and we really want to encourage all the states to get up to speed and be in the same, be running with us at the same speed.
And Greg Sadezan, what happens with, what do you do with a report like this one from the National Juvenile Justice Network? Do you apply this and use some of this information in what you're doing with the unified judicial system here in the state?
Yeah, it's very valuable. It kind of came at a very unique time where we were right in the middle of starting to have these discussions about expanding it statewide, and we've received report support to the governor's office and his recommended budget to make that JDI coordinator a permanent position here, and we're hoping the legislature approves that. So it really allows us to keep building on the momentum that we have, and so I think the timing of it from my perspective was perfect, because we have to have this information out there, we have to start the discussion, and this really highlights the background, but also gives us a chance to talk about where we want to go from here.